Everyone, and welcome to Q Talk Radio. My name is Elena Pop, and welcome to our housing rights housing justice organization called the Eviction Defense Network in Los Angeles. We focus on anti-displacement, anti-discrimination, anything that will hurt a tenant work, and we are an access to justice organization as well. And today on our first show, we have two guests. Nikki Jackson from the AIDS Healthcare Foundation is going to talk to us about the AIDS Healthcare Foundation role in housing justice. And Paul Langto from the Los Angeles Tenants Union, who is also going to talk about the LA Tenants Union's great work doing anti-displacement, anti-gentrification work in LA. So, Nikki, tell us a little bit about you and tell us a little bit about the AIDS Healthcare Foundation and why you're involved in housing rights work.
Well, first of all, it's great to be in the studio with people I admire so much as Elena Pop and Tenants Union. I'm a huge fan. AIDS Healthcare Foundation started out as AIDS Hospice Foundation. And our first logo back in 1987 when we started was the letters AHF that formed the house. I'm sure my hand gestures are helping you see this on the radio. But we really started out building housing or our rehabbing housing both for people with HIV/AIDS in the final months of their lives. So we were housing people. That was our beginning. It's a full circle for us. I started out as an artist. I was an artist most of my life, a professional artist, but I was also a very adamant activist. And I hooked up with Morris Kite when I was 15 and a half, and he was quite the gay pioneer. I actually met him through the anti-war movement. And in those faraway days, that was before we had a gay and lesbian rights really going, except for grassroots efforts like Morris. And before we had a cinder, before we had anything. And so I would drive Morris around at night after school. I was in college. And we would literally be helping people who were being thrown out of their apartments for being gay, for being lesbian, for being transgender. You could throw people out for that. And we would try to find them a place. We would store their things in someone's garage. It was kind of pandemonium. And so it's always been very close to me, issues of housing, issues of people's rights. And as the great takeover of corporations in this country that has spread to housing, where so much housing is corporately owned, the displacement is so extreme. And I think lesbians suffer a lot from it because women do not make as much money for the same jobs as men. And lesbians, even if you're married, you're both making less money on, chances are pretty good. So I think those things really come together. And then I just hate to see anybody displaced. I don't care who they are.
And most recently, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation has really become part of this rising statewide tenants' rights movement. So to give our listeners a little background. Movements for housing rights have risen and then not risen. In the 1940s in New York, we had a housing crisis that led to a tenants' rights movement that got rent control in New York. In the mid to late 1970s in California, we had a housing crisis that got us rent control in Los Angeles and in some cities in the Bay Area. In 1984 in West Hollywood. And those movements were born from necessity. They were born from people being backed up against the wall, not being able to afford their rent. It's happening again now. It started about 2 years ago, really, really hit a crisis point towards the end of 2016. And the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, which started doing hospice work, is now doing way more than hospice work, is a leader in this tenants' rights movement. Tell me that history.
Well, AHF, when the meds came in 1996, AHF just jumped up and down with joy, and we leapt on it faster and harder than anyone. And we were successful in building clinics. We are now in 39 countries. We're the largest provider of healthcare to people with HIV in the world. And we were happily able to close our hospices as people cycled out because they were getting well, they were getting better. They were living in a well fashion. They saw the disease, but it suppresses it. So we became very involved in clinics because the urgency, get the medications out there and people will live. So we went into that. Then as the housing crisis hit here, our patients were unhoused. Our patients, they most of them live on very limited income because we're a provider that never turns anyone away for lack of ability to pay. So we have a very, very vastly majority census of patients who are very low income. And so suddenly our patients, they're one of their biggest problems was housing. You know, years ago, we actually did housing demonstrations about the housing opportunities for people with AIDS federal program. Well, LA was not spending our money, and our patients were cycling through homelessness because of it. We actually did demonstrations. We sat in on then Mayor Reardon's lawn, and we did all of these big demonstrations because our assistance money wasn't being spent. So we have a real history with this, and our patients started coming in and saying, you know, I don't know which clinic I'll be coming to or any clinic because I'm losing my housing. And one of the key factors for whether a person will take their meds, I mean, it's just way up there. The only bigger factor is whether you can get the meds or not is housing. People who are not housed do not take their meds. And certainly HIV meds, but other meds too. So it's a public housing crisis. And AHF's very involved in other types of public health as well. So for us, this is urgent. This is about our patients. It's about everyone. And people tend to contract disease and have a lot more problems with disease, contract HIV much more if they're homeless also. So we have a clinic right down at Skid Row in downtown. So we have been front and center seeing that. We purchased a building, the Madison, on Skid Row, and we have rehabbed it, and we are putting people in it. It had almost no one in it when we bought it, and now it's getting filled up. We purchased a motel on Sunset Boulevard. That will be transitional housing for families. We're finishing up on it and bringing people in. We are building housing in Florida because we are all over the United States. Our care is in many states. And we have our patients and other people. It won't just be our patients. We'll be taking all sorts of folks. And we're hoping to create a model. This business of every low-cost housing unit is over $400,000 to build. We don't believe that. We're proving it different. We have a different model. And we're proving that you can build housing for half of that or a little more than half, which then allows you to build more housing, and it allows you to have more of that housing be low income.
One of the things I say often is that we can't build our way out of this crisis. It costs between $700 and $1,000 to save someone's home by paying a good eviction lawyer to fight the eviction, and $100,000 in land costs alone to build a unit of affordable housing. So I absolutely agree with you that we need to build, but we also need to preserve what we have, and we also need to get a handle on how expensive it is to build affordable housing. And I also have experienced the repercussions of instability. In the 1980s, I actually was part of a group of people that spent a month on the streets as part of a protest. And it is amazing how your mind starts to shift and how unfocused you can become, and how a paper cut can turn into a major infection because you can't wash your hands as regularly. And all of these things that we take for granted, including being able to stay on top of our regular business by taking masks, become impossible. The threat to the loss of people's homes is the second most stressful experience anyone will ever have. The loss of a close loved one being number one, and the loss of a job being number three, with a major life-threatening illness actually falling fourth on the list, which is, I've always found kind of interesting. So last August, I'm sure you noticed the rise in rents. We certainly noticed it at the Eviction Defense Network. Prior to August of last year, if someone had been in their housing less than 2 years, they were willing to move out. So often people would fall into some financial hardship, not be able to pay their rent, or have some sort of conflict with their landlord. The landlord wants them out, and they would get an eviction proceeding, but there was a willingness on the part of the tenant to move out and a willingness on the part of the landlord to let them go with a clean record and some saved money so they could make a transition elsewhere. Starting in August of 2016, that changed. And by November of 2016, 87% of our clients wanted to stay. And it's because rents had risen so dramatically that people could not find replacement housing. And that's about the time that the AIDS Healthcare Foundation called me and basically posed, what the hell's going on? How come our patients can't find places to go when they are displaced from their housing? So we had a meeting about it, and we talked about the reasons. And one of the reasons that we identified was a law that was passed in 1995 called Costa-Hawkins. And that law, state bill, weakened rent control and made it harder for us to pass new rent control. And the AIDS Healthcare Foundation got involved in the movement. Tell us a little bit about how you're involved, what you're doing around Costa-Hawkins.
Yes, Elena really gave us focus. She really gave us great information. It really helped us move forward knowledgeably. And again, our patients, it were pretty much the same profile as Elena's clients. When it got impossible to move, they were between the proverbial rock and a hard place. So one of the things that we're doing now, and we're working on it, is a possible initiative to repeal Costa-Hawkins, which is a very draconian and bizarre law that forbids people to the municipalities to do rent control in a modern fashion. And I remember 1978 when we got rent stabilization here in Los Angeles, and I think it's key. I mean, I don't think a city can create itself as a county, a city, as a livable place where it has a nice mix of people. Who's going to go work in these jobs? Where are they going to live? The city's interest itself should be very tied up with rent control, because otherwise you have an unstable city, and that isn't even to speak of the human suffering, which is so great. So for us, it's, alleviating human suffering is a big deal, whether it's our patients, whether it's anybody you can think of. Social justice and alleviating rent control are extremely important. And as Elena points out, losing our rent-stabilized housing, we're losing that at such a clip. I believe that the statistic that Elena said was over 2,000 a year of these affordable units are being destroyed. And between moving people out and destroying units, we're just pushing people off the edge of a cliff.
And so between 55,000 and 73,000 units are lost a year in LA County through eviction alone, through the actual eviction process. A few minutes ago, you mentioned that you first met Maurice Keith in the anti-war movement.
Yes.
And I've actually always marveled at how LGBTQ people, you know, we have our movement, but we're always helping other people. Talk a little about that. We're always involved in other movements.
That's really true. I mean, the proportion of LGBTQ people who are involved in all, it never ceases to amaze me. And it's quite inspiring. I mean, a prime leader in our movement, a prime pioneer, was Maurice Keith. he was a big leader in the anti-war movement. And, you know, here I see we LGBTQ people have a huge interest in helping people in many ways, and helping tenants is only one of them. I would guess that we are a rather large percentage tenant-based group of people. Quite a lot of LGBTQ people, particularly young people, have a harder start in life. A lot of times they don't have as much parental support. At least now people can get married. They used to have a lot of trouble with one. People would be together 30 years and one would die and the family would come in who hadn't spoken to somebody in 30 years, take the housing, and the other would be left. So I think there's a lot of empathy for other people. And also we recognize we're part of the population as a whole. And if anything affects anyone, it affects us, and it affects us deeply.
A couple of years ago, a young straight lawyer commented to me that the vast majority of tenants' rights lawyers in LA County at the time were lesbians. All of us involved in the LGBT movement and other as well, but fighting for tenants' rights. So I think we're going to take a short break at this point and then come back with Paul Langto. And we're going to be playing a song called I Love Madly by Irene Diaz. And if you want to more information about the show, please go on qtalkradio.com. If you want information about the Eviction Defense Network's campaign to resist all displacement in LA County, hashtag on every fridge. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that in the next part of the show. Enjoy the song.
Bumba! flowers and guitars. Now wrote a song for you to sing how special you are. Oh, you are. Why with just the thought of you? Oh, I love you madly. Oh, I love you madly. Oh, I love you madly. Yeah. Oh, yes, I do.
Welcome back to QTalk Radio. You can find us at qtalkradio.com. We have been listening to I Love You Madly by local LA artist Irene Diaz. Hope you enjoyed the song. This morning we've been talking to Mickey Jackson from the AIDS Healthcare Foundation about housing rights and the AIDS Healthcare Foundation role in the housing rights movement. And now we are joined by Paul Lagto of the Los Angeles Tenants Union. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes. So I want to start by asking you, why housing? How did you get involved in this rising statewide movement that is calling for resistance to all displacement of any tenant in the state of California? How did you get involved?
Yeah, well, first, I joined the LA Tenants Union about a year and a half ago. And I got involved really for two reasons. One was wanting to be more active in my community and getting to know my neighbors. And the other reason was when you live in LA, you can't really escape the housing struggle. You see it every day. You see the homelessness struggle every day when you go for walks on the street and you see the changing neighborhoods. I live in West Adams, which is historically been an area population and high Latino population, and you see every week there's a house that's been flipped in the neighborhood, and there's a higher student population coming in from the USC area. So you just see these neighborhoods changing and changing at the expense of people's livelihoods and people's housing. So it's really an urgent issue, and it kind of forces you to be involved or to be pushed to the wayside, really.
So I explained earlier that I'm the executive director of a housing rights organization that represents tenants and evictions and does all kinds of anti-displacement, housing justice, access to justice, resisting displacement work. And we are very active with the LA Tenants Union and very supportive of their work. Tell us a little bit about the exposition building and what you're trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, so with the LA Tenants Union, I'm a member of the South LA local. And one of our current battles right now is with the Exposition evictions, which are seven buildings off of Exposition of Vermont, so right on the Expo line and a block from USC, that were purchased back in the end of September for $10 million. And immediately, within 2 weeks, the new owners put eviction notices on all of the doors of all of the units, with the intent of renovating and converting the units into USC student housing. And these are predominantly people of color, all working class, low income folks, many on Section 8, and many were in a transitional housing program, the pilot program, which is administered by the county to get folks off of the streets, and now they're being kicked back onto the streets for USC students. So this is a battle that's been underway for months now, in which we're fighting to get a meeting with the owners to really negotiate the right for these tenants to stay in their homes And we've had multiple public actions, solidarity with different organizations like ACE and the Fight for 15, which we just had an action pretty recently in which we did a large march around USC. And so that's kind of the battle that's been going on with that.
And ACE is the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, a great statewide organization that's also working on that bill to repeal Costa-Hawkins that Mickey Jackson was talking about, and does a lot of great work around neighborhood preservation. And someday I think we'll have them on a future show. So why can the landlord just put eviction notices on the door?
So, yeah, because these units were all non-RSO units, which is the fence stabilization ordinance. When you're in a non-RSO unit, the landlord has the right to evict you for any reason or for no reason at all, really, within 30 days, if you've only lived there for less than a year. And if you've lived there for more than a year, they can evict you with a notice of 60 days. And that's all they have to do. They don't have to provide a reason. You don't have to have violated anything, even if you've been paying your rent on time. A landlord can just do this because they have the desire to, because they want to make more money, and because the city is, you know, valuing money over people's livelihoods. When there's not a universal rent control, really. In rent-controlled units, there are more protections. There are eviction protections and protections against annual rent increases, in which you can only have your rent increased to 3 to 5% each year. But that still doesn't protect you against harassment from the landlords. So there's all sorts of issues going around that.
So the exposition building is not protected by rent control, even though it is in L.A. And the reason for that is?
Because of Costa-Hawkins, the Costa-Hawkins Act, largely, in which prevents local municipalities from passing their own rent control laws. And so since 1995 or so, the city hasn't been able to pass its own rent control laws to help protect tenants in this way.
In 2008, there was an attempt to eliminate rent control in the then 11 cities that had it in the state of California. And I got involved in the movement to stop that. And I remember one day after phone banking, there were 16 phone bankers and none of them were tenants. And I realized that all of us had been tenants when we first got involved in the tenants' rights movement. But we had all bought our own homes, and something that very few people can do these days because of this horrible economy and the ability of people to make huge profits off of property, which is making impossible for people to buy their own home. And in any event, what I realized then is that we really needed to have a tenants movement led by tenants. And the LA Tenants Union does that. But people have to suit up and show up if they want to protect their housing. These units at Exposition are not protected because in 1977, when we were fighting for rent control, there weren't enough tenants in the room to persuade the city council that we should protect all new units. So when the developers came in and said, no, we won't build anymore if you protect new construction, the city council capitulated. And then in 1995, the state legislature should put a nail on the coffin and said, you can't protect units that were built after the law was enacted. So it's now been since 1978, that's a lot of years, it's a lot of unprotected units. And we have situations like Exposition where we simply have to organize in order to protect those tenants because the law does not really protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the recent victory at Mariachi Plaza.
Yeah, so going on that, that's kind of the void that the LA Tenants Union fits in being an entirely tenant-led movement, an entirely volunteer-based movement. And one of the big victories we've had, as you just mentioned, is the Mariachi victory, in which there was 25 units that were served with notices that the rent was going to increase $800 a month about a year ago now, and that forced people into action. These were also not rent-controlled units, just as in the Exposition housing apartments. And basically this led to a year-long struggle with a legal battle and a very large political battle and getting public support and showing up to courtrooms and mass numbers. Solidarity organizations would do tent encampments in front of the owner's house to really try to force the owner to be reasonable and to meet with these people and to realize the lives that he's affecting by doing these increases and forcing these people out just to make a profit. And recently, they were able to finally come to an agreement just a couple of weeks ago in which the Mariachis essentially want a rent control agreement in a non-rent control apartment. Their rent for drops, the initial increase was dropped dramatically, and for the next 3.5 years, I believe it's held to the standard of rent control at 5% each year. And after that 3.5 years is up, they're also able to negotiate, they're given the right to negotiate a new deal with the landlord.
And by then, we're going to have rent control units. So, yeah, it was quite the victory, and let's give credit where credit is due there. The LA Tenants Union had a huge part in that organizing. Unión de Vecinos, which is another group that organizes tenants on the east side, and the LA Center for Community Law and Action was the legal team. And I recently heard a presentation by the lawyers from LACLA with the tenants and Unión de Vecinos. And one of the points that the lawyer made is that at the first meeting with the tenants, he was completely upfront with them. There are no legal handles here, or very weak legal handles. And so the organizing really needed to take a lead in that, getting public support for the plight of these families with long tenancy in this building. And the building that mariachi plaza, and they're mariachis for the most part, and so they've got to have a huge emotional connection to living near mariachi plaza, as well as an economic connection. And as the new owner comes in and says, you can stay here if you can afford these exorbitant rents, but they couldn't afford those exorbitant rents. And this social movement then led to saving those units. And we're really happy about that. Tell us about Burlington, which is the newest effort and very exciting yesterday.
Yeah, so Burlington, the Burlington apartments are over 300 units that are also not rent control, kind of in the Vermont, Beverly area, that have been experiencing severe landlord harassment, in which the landlord shut off the power and water in all of the units, and it's trying to harass them out of these units, essentially. So that's a massive complex. I mean, 300 units, 300 families is an insane amount. And now the current struggle with them is organizing them and using the precedent of the mariachis to really stand up for your own rights when the city won't help you and when the law is not on your side to demand change and to demand the right to stay in your homes and to stay in a livable, affordable homes.
In that case, Mitchell Farrell, their council member, instead of coming out and supporting them, actually sent private emails to some of the organizers saying, you better not be promoting rent strikes there. It isn't that we're promoting a rent strike as much as people cannot afford these rents. So they're not going to be paying these rents in April. And they're living in horrible conditions. So they have a right to withhold rent. So yes, last week the tenants declared a rent strike. They all bought their money orders. They filled them out to the owner. They made copies of them. And on the copy, they wrote huelga, which means strike, and turned them in to the manager. And if the owner wants to get their rent, the owner has to come to the table and negotiate with these tenants for repairs, for better treatment, and for reasonable rent increases. The concept is one of a collective bargaining agreement. That's what the mariachi got. A collective agreement that protects all of these otherwise unprotected tenants, very much the way labor unions come into a workspace where workers have few rights as well, and they negotiate a collective employment agreement with the owner, so that, or the owner of the factory or of the business, so that tenants will have protections that the law does not give them. You know, people need to resist. They need to resist injustice. They need to resist displacement. They need to resist large rent increases. They need to protect their homes. And I, for one, am very proud to be a member of the Tenants Union, a non-voting member, because I'm a landlord, and only tenants get to vote. I will say that, you know, often when I walk into a group of tenants, the lawyer walks in and the dynamic shifts. And the dynamic shifts from one in which the lawyer has way more power, no matter how hard you try not to have power. LA Tenant Union meetings, that does not happen. When I walk in, I am just but one other person in the room and have less institutional power in that room than everybody else, because I don't have a vote. I can speak, I can opine, but I don't have a vote. And that is the way that a tenant movement should be led, and I am very proud to be a part of that. Do you want to talk a little to that, Paul?
Yeah, I think that really just goes with centering kind of the most oppressed in the city and building the struggle out of that. We define a tenant as anyone who does not control their housing situation. So that includes the homeless, that includes folks paying rent, and that includes folks who have a living situation that they have no control in if they've been forced to live with family in it because of these rising rents or something like that. And so that we center, our mission is on tenants' rights. And so that's anything that is affecting tenants, whether that is ICE knocking on the door and fighting against these immigration, anti-immigration raids, as well as your rights as a citizen and being able to afford your housing. So that's kind of what that is all around, really.
Right. So we're just going to wind down our first show, and I want to, again, go back to the voice of queer people in movement and sort of focus on that point again a little bit more. When I was asked to do the show 2 weeks ago, I put out an email to find folks that were queer that would want to come on the show. I thought at least the first show should be LGBT folks talking about the issue from their own perspective. And I was surprised actually at how many members of the Tenants Union are queer. It was like no shortage of people who could come on the show. And two of the founders, Walt Centerfit and Don Rhine, were active in ACT UP. And so do you know the story of Don and Walt and how they came to be such an important part of this organization?
Yeah, I know a bit. I know that they were very active in the ACT UP movement. And about 3 or 4 years ago, they were all, along with several other, you know, folks in the community, were served with Ellis Act evictions, which is a way for tenants to evict rent-controlled units despite having eviction protections. Ellis Act was a law that was passed to really overdo that and evict these tenants. So that struggle came out of a lot of folks in the queer community actually losing their housing because of this law, despite supposedly, you know, being supposed to have these rights. And so they, having these organizing skills built up in the queer community and the fight for their rights under ACT UP, really kind of started to build this housing rights movement. So it was built largely by queer people, and it continues to be led by a lot of queer folks in the community.
Yeah. So I would say that don't mess with queer people, because they don't mess with anybody when there's a queer person around, because they're going to stand up and do something about it. And don't mess with queer people and their housing, or you're going to get this rising tenants movement out of it. There were folks in 3 different buildings, and Walt was in one building, and Don was another, and then other folks were in other buildings, and they knew each other. And they had all gotten notices under this law called Ellis that allows a landlord in a rent-controlled building to just go out of business to evict everyone at once. We need to repeal that law as well. And when they started talking to each other, they decided it was time to form some sort of tenants union. And now we have a very, very active, 3,000 members strong, 9 chapters organization that is the winds of change, certainly in Los Angeles, and contributing in a very significant way, both statewide, including helping found other tenants' unions, and also on also in, for helping form units in other parts of the country. So thank you for joining us today, March 18th, and we hope you will join us on April 15th, the next airing of our show. And in the meantime, if you want more information, qtalkradio.com or hashtag on every fridge for a list of resources and organizations that you can get involved with to stop displacement. Get involved. The only way we will be able to save our community. Thank you and have a happy Sunday.